It's the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Every Tuesday at 4, we are joined by the great Jordan Mailata. Jordan's call is brought to you by Colonial Hyundai. Shop online 24/7, colonialhyundai.com. Colonial Hyundai, the faster, easier, better way to buy a Hyundai. Jordan, how you doing, man?
Afternoon, fellas.
What's up, brother? Hey, listen, squad is 2-0 without you, man. what are we going to do here?
Hey, man, control what you can control, man. I'm focusing on my rehab right now.
All right.
I love that we're 2-0, man. You know, Fred and Steen, they're doing a hell of a job stepping up and, you know, winning games. And that's what you want out of your players, that, you know, your backups.
Yeah, in all seriousness.
Doing a job, man.
No, for sure. Listen, we can't wait to get you back out there. But I'm pretty sure you do have to be happy for your offensive line mates out there. They have been doing a hell of a job, not only just in the running game, but this week they seemed to clean up the passing game and did a great job in protection as well.
For sure. You saw it, man. What a great game up front. You know, they always say it starts up front, starts in the trenches, and you know, the guys started off hot, man, and they just kept building on that momentum, and what a win.
Do you think, watching the offense, do you feel like that was the most complete offensive game that the team has played this year?
Oh, for sure. Even though we didn't score in the first quarter.
First drive, though.
You did score on the first drive, though.
Counts, man. I mean, bloody hell. There was like 5 minutes left on the clock. Like, what are we supposed to do there? Like...
Do you think so? We were actually talking in the last segment about the Eagles, you know, offensive identity or whatever, and you guys have a new offensive coordinator. Do you feel like how you guys are going to play is starting to clear itself up in terms of, you know, what the rhythm is and where everyone needs to go, that what kind of offense the Eagles are going to be?
Yeah, for sure. They've made it clear of what our identity is going to be, and I think all the guys are embracing it, and you've seen it the last 2 weeks, really, with just, you know, the run game and the play-action game and getting explosive when we need to get explosives. And, you know, the other thing that we've been harping on about is execution and making sure that, you know, we're executing in practice. In the last, you know, 2 weeks, the practices have been, like, squeaky clean, you know. So everybody's been executing, and they've been it's been showing up on the tape, especially the last game.
This is, I guess, less of a specific question and more just something that we have noticed, is just that post-bye, it seems like that everything is starting to fall into place. And it felt like after the Tampa game, the bye was coming at a good time. But I wonder, too, if the team feels like post-bye that there is a renewed sort of focus and understanding about what you all need to do.
Yeah, we've spoken about it before. You know, that bye week came at a very opportune time, even though, you know, we spoke before the season, and it was like we thought it would be inopportune, but quite the opposite. And you know, I think the coaches, you know, spent a lot of time in there during the bye week to really make our corrections and make sure that, you know, we stay the course of, you know, trying to win Super Bowls. And, you know, we've come back and we've become sponges, just soak up all the new information, the direction we're going, the game plan changes, and sort of, you know, mold this identity that we've become in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, really.
Mm-hmm. We're on with the Eagles left tackle, Jordan Mailata. Jordan, Spike just brought up that bye week, and we've been discussing that because that seems like where at least you guys have started to play a lot more consistent coming out of that bye week. My question for you, even though you haven't been there the last 2 weeks, but prior to that and heading into that bye week, I've been so impressed with the way the team has sort of handled those early struggles. You know, when things weren't going well and there was a lot of noise on the outside, I've been impressed with the way you guys have sort of been able to handle that and stay together and stay on common ground. How important do you think that has been for this team's overall success? And we're starting to see sort of the benefits of that, of you guys sticking together versus sort of what happened late in the year last year.
Man, you know, this is why training camp is is crucial. You know, you want to start building relationships and understanding your playbook, you know, as much as you can and as fast as you can. And so, you know, when things do hit the fan.
Mm-hmm. appreciate you holding that in. Thank you.
When things do hit the fan, you know, you're all on the same page. You understand why it's not working. You can't just be pointing fingers. You know, you just got to get back in the playbook and figure out the answers to why, you know, we weren't winning or we weren't being as dominant as we know we could, because camp's different. Camp's different to a game, and, you know, it's play teams, you're going to see unscouted looks. You're going to see things that, you know, disguises that can, you know, muddy the water a little bit. So it's crucial that, you know, as a team, we stick together and we understand, you know, right now we know what to do to get better, and we just got to stick with each other, man. That's why connection is such a big thing for Nick.
Now, we all know you'll do whatever's asked for you, but could you give some perspective as to how much more you would enjoy run blocking than pass blocking?
Listen, I don't mind pass blocking. I just prefer run blocking. You know, run blocking, you can assert your dominance. If you want to win up front, assert your dominance, and then you can run everything off that. I can't give an example of how much I love run blocking, but, you know, I don't mind pass blocking. You know, that's part of the game. You have to understand that comes with the position. And so, you know, if some games are going to be won in the run, some games are going to be won in the pass, and some games, like last week, it's a beautiful mixture of both.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of roles that are being played, Ben Van Summeren back there as the fullback. How impressed have you been with him back there playing in that role as a fullback? We're not used to seeing a fullback around here the last few years. So how impressed have you been with that and having that part of your running game?
I have so much respect for Ben, man. He's such a specimen. And I mean that in every way, shape, and form. The guy's just built different. The best part about it, he doesn't complain. He just wants to play ball. You know, he has that offensive bloodline in him. So, you know, anytime he can be on the field, he's going to embrace it. And what a mix-up that is, a little wrinkle mm-hmm. for everyone to see. Just the difference of having a fullback and somebody who's built like Benny, who's fast. We can throw him the ball. He can block in the run game. You know, this guy's truly special, and we're pretty lucky to have him, to be honest.
So, Jordan, you're on IR now. How is the rehab going, and how's the hamstring feeling?
Hamstring's getting stronger. Rehab's going great. We're on track. So, yeah, it's going to be, you know, just taking it day by day and making sure there are no setbacks. But, so far, so good.
So, I'm going to finish with probably the most important questions. You know Elliot Shore Parks, right? You know him well.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, two things I just learned about Elliot, and I just wanted your comment on each individual one. The first thing is, I learned that Elliot will buy shoes that don't fit him simply because he likes the shoes. So if it's a size too small, Elliot will buy it and wear it anyway. What do you think of someone who does something like that? Have you ever? Would you wear it?
Before I answer this, how did you find this out?
He said it on the radio.
Yeah, he told us. Yeah
it was on the radio, man. I'm not revealing anything. Yes.
Yeah. Man incriminated himself.
Yes, yes.
Listen, man, he's a sneakerhead, so I don't particularly have a an opinion on it.
Okay.
I know he's a little sneakerhead, so...
Little's a good word to use there as well.
Yeah, little. Yeah. Only a size 8. Size 8 is his correct size, so...
I can't remember the last time I was a size 8. It's probably like 5 years old.
Yeah.
I was a size 8.
Okay.
Elio!
And second Elliot thing that I just learned is that he thought the phrase Jesus, Mary, and Joseph referred to two people, Jesus and somebody named Marion Joseph. And it wasn't until 2 weeks ago that he realized that Mary and Joseph were two different people.
That's absurd. I can't save him on this one.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a grown man. How does he not know this?
Diabolical.
We don't know what's wrong with him, man. I don't know how he's gotten this far in life.
He is almost 40.
Oh, man. Thank you for giving me the tea. I can't wait to see him in the locker room.
Yeah. Well,
my goodness.
Team's doing good without you, but we know that the Eagles will be even better when you return. And we wish you good luck on your rehab. Appreciate you joining us every week.
Can't wait to have you back out there,
yeah,
big dog.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All there right. He is, Jordan Mailata. I had to ask Jordan about the Elliott stuff. Sorry.
Small feet, man. Come on, E.
Size 8.
I won't even tell anybody I wear 8.5, man.
8. Don't even give him a half. You said 8.5.
Right. Yeah.
When you say 8 and 8.5, you know what you are. You're an 8.
An 8,
like,
okay.
When I say 10, 10.5, it right. means I'm a, like,
a 10.
A 10. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because, yeah. No, you're right. Right. I've been wearing, I didn't know Elliot was still here. Sorry about that, E.
No, he's doing great. He handled that well. I'm glad. As he storms out of the studio.
Yeah, I didn't know he was still here.
My we got a thumbs up from Elliot. Oh, that's great. That is great. So coming up in about 15 minutes, Brad Lidge will join us on the anniversary of the Phillies winning the World Series in 08. If you've noticed, they're not playing anymore this year. But
right.
But we'll ask Brad about, I think it'll be interesting to ask Brad about the problems we had with the bullpen this year, truly. He had such a great regular season and was able to bring that into the postseason. And maybe if he noticed, you know, what went wrong with the Phillies bullpen this year, aside from, you know, being bad. So Brad Lidge will join us in about 15 minutes. Do you believe, once again, in the Eagles that they are Super Bowl contenders? Ike and Jack, I'm stunned. Ike, I'm not surprised. Jack, I'm stunned.
Well, listen, it's more like, I kind of feel it. But then the more and more people start talking, then I get back to myself.
Right. Yeah, they push you back. With
of course. Yeah. Because I am
genuinely excited.
There you go.
215-592-9494. Anthony, you're on WIP. What's up, Ant?
Hey, what's going on, man? How you guys doing?
What's up, Ant?
What up, Ant?
What's going on? Hey, Spike, man, you got to stop the negativity, man.
I'm not being negative.
No.
No. We're gonna be all right, man. This team is right where they need to be. And I don't know if you guys heard earlier, but I believe Nick said that this identity of this team is physicality. I think the identity, it should be a jack of all trades, man. If you can't stop the run, that's what we're gonna do. If you can't stop the pass, that's what we're gonna do. We can beat you any way that we wanna beat you. As long as we do not turn the ball over, we're going to beat you.
Well, I mean, those things are all tied into each other. You know, not turning the ball over, I think in a lot of ways, is related to being able to pass the ball, right? So one of the things that I think we all are looking forward to seeing what happens, and Elliot believes that they will be okay here, is if they have to pass. I guess the question would be, this turnover thing has coincided pretty side by side to them just not throwing the ball nearly as much. And do you believe that if that were to change, if the defense says, okay, you're not running the ball now, if we play a defense that decides they're going to stop the Eagles from running, do you believe that turnover problem will stay away if the Eagles need to throw the ball more?
Yes. If Jalen throwing the ball 40 times or 35 times, it's bizarre to say that he shouldn't have one turnover.
No. I agree with you. I think there's a difference between turning the ball over and turnovers being a problem, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Every quarterback turns the ball over, and the more you throw it, the more you're going to turn the ball over. I think that the question just becomes, what is the breaking point there? What is the balance point there? And can they, because the running the ball is great. But like I was talking with Elliot, the Niners last year, though we believe in them as primarily a running team, when they needed to throw the ball, they were a ridiculously effective team throwing the ball as well. So again, it does look like it's trending in the right direction. Mm-hmm. If you go from the Giants game to the Bengals game, you know, the Giants game he actually dropped back 21 times in the Giants game. So I don't think the game plan was that much different from the Giants and the Bengals.
Yeah.
The difference was that Jalen got sacked more in the Giants game, ended up scrambling more in the Giants mm-hmm. game. So that's all. I think I'm not being negative. I don't know if you heard the show yesterday, Anthony. I was ridiculously positive about the win. I feel good about the direction they're going. I'm just not
just not ready to go all the way just yet.
To say that the team we saw yesterday is the team.
Right.
You know, that's my issue, you know.
Yeah, we're going in a great direction. And like you said about San Fran is identified as a running team. But the reason why the pass is so how you said it is, it's because of efficiency. They don't throw the ball 40, 50 yards down the field. They do little dinks and dunks or wrinkles or whatever off the run game.
Sure.
The run game there is so good.
Yes. Yep. But one of the things they were able to do, you know, Anthony, one of the reasons they were able to be so effective is they were able to get McCaffrey the ball in the passing game. And that is one thing that we have not solved quite yet. And I hope we're on the way to it, seeing Jalen being under center more.
Still can't run a damn screen.
Yeah, the ability of the Niners, and I'm not saying we need to be last year's Niners in every single way, but when we look at how they were effective in the pass game, a lot of that quick passing stuff was Christian McCaffrey. That's how he became, that's how he had those couple of years where he was, you know, debatably the best offensive player in the league. Yeah. You know, all right, Anthony, I appreciate the call, man.
Yeah,
I don't think I'm being negative. Do you think? I don't feel like I'm being negative.
Well, you know, sometimes people don't hear the whole show, so they catch you saying one thing.
Yeah, I feel.
No, you've been good.
I feel really good about the way that it's trending. And I know that yesterday or that Sunday's game was the exclamation point on everything, but I still go back to that. I think if this ends up being a really successful season at the end, to me, I will go back to that Giants game and the way they responded after the week of criticism on Nick.
On Nick,
And no matter how you want to frame the Browns game, it didn't look like a game.
Well, it didn't feel good
didn't
coming
feel
out
good.
Of it. Yeah,
yes,
yeah, no, you're right about that. That's one of those games where you're like, you gotta break the tape down and all that versus just feeling good coming out of a game.
It's almost like if that game had happened in the middle of a stretch where the Eagles looked great, we would go, look, we won the game. That's all that matters.
Yeah, it was one-off game. Yeah.
The problem was it was the game after the bye, after the Tampa game.
Yes.
With a team that we were favored, I think, 8.5 points over. So there's a, yes, a win is a win. But in that context, at that moment, the way that they looked at that moment, it just wasn't what we were hoping for. And I think that was fair to say at the time.
Oh, no doubt. And I still believe in a win is a win, but that doesn't change how the winning is perceived.
Right.
In other words, you can win by 1 point or 30, it's still a win. But if you win by 30, that win is perceived as a dominant win. So as a fan, you're going to be more confident in a team that wins that way versus someone that squeaks by or something of that nature. So when we're talking about, okay, what do you ultimately feel the team is? You haven't seen enough of it yet. I mean, that's basically what it boils down to.
Sure.
You haven't seen enough yet.
No.
That's not being unfair or outrageous or anything. I'm driving the bus. Hugh's with me.
Yep.
Yeah, Hugh's with me.
And where are you going, Ike?
We're going to New Orleans, baby.
Taking everybody to Pound Town, baby.
I forgot I said that earlier.
Yeah.
Let me tell you.
Taking everybody to Pound Town, baby.
If the Eagles stay good, the Pound Town thing is sticking around. I have news for you.
We've gone from using ground and pound into Pound Town. Yeah, we just.
No matter what.
I will say, though, I think Merrill actually started the pounding.
Merrill's in on it. Yes. Yeah, Merrill knows.
I didn't know we had to pause Merrill.
Yeah. No matter what we do on this show, it always ends up in the same stupid place.
It usually does.
We were in the opening segment, and I was like, is Ike yelling about Pound Town? I'm not going to be able to ignore that. I'm going to have to keep on with that. All right. Coming up next, Lights Out Lidge joins us on this, the anniversary of the Phillies winning the World Series in 08. That is next on the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.
Oh, yeah.
It's the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Brad Lidge joining us in moments. Today, the, what's it, 19th anniversary? Wait, 08.
16th.
16th anniversary.
16.
I'm good at math. Mm-hmm. Of the 08 World Series win from the Phillies. Do you, obviously, you now you are on the air.
Yes, sir.
Now,
who could forget his World Series call?
Yeah.
Seems like everybody did.
You don't have that, do you?
No, we
haven't been able to find it.
Yeah, it's borderline.
I would love to hear it.
So Ike was on the air when the Phillies won the World Series because at the time, WIP did not have the Phillies games on the air. They were on 1210 WPHT, our sister station here.
So we were still on 610.
Yeah, we were still on 610. Were you doing it from a bar or something? Oh, you were.
Yeah,
okay.
That was at a...
just watching the game? Do people
call?
I don't
know if the bar is still there or not.
Oh, really?
This was the MVP Sports Lounge. This is out in Newtown.
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah, I think it's on Newtown Square. Something like that.
And were people calling or
I got a couple calls because it was a, I want to say it was a game on that night. Obviously the Phillies were on.
Yeah, a football game, you mean.
Or was it something else on? Nobody called.
Yeah, I was going to say. Well, it's just because everybody's...
Hey, I'm in a bar full of people.
Yes.
I'm really just talking to myself on there. That's really all I was doing.
And everyone else is definitely drinking.
Yes.
They're probably coming up to you as you're trying to do the show.
Yeah, it was a weird setting.
Well, when I talk about, you know, you've been on WIP a long time and you've become a great host and the face of the station in a lot of ways.
Oh, thank you, Spike.
Well, no, you have. And but when I
appreciating time coming up too. Taking everybody to Pound Town, baby.
when I talk about that, how you got there,
yes.
I always think about the fact that you started off doing shows at night by yourself.
Yeah.
And having done shows by yourself, sometimes it's easier than others, but just to put in perspective, to do a show when the most important sporting event in Philadelphia is going on and literally nobody's paying attention to you, you don't get any calls, and you also have to keep your eye on the game, it's about as challenging a radio show as you could possibly do. I can't even imagine having to do that show.
So back then we used to have that rule where they didn't really want you talking about the game while it was going on.
Well, you can't say what happens. It's against the rules.
Yeah, it's like a play-by-play thing.
Yeah.
So imagine being on the air talking about the Eagles during this time. Yes, talking about football during this time while that is going on. And by the way, the Eagles hadn't turned around the season yet. This was the year they went to the championship game and lost to the Cardinals.
Oh.
But it got off to a rocky start there. Yeah.
We won 9 games, I think.
Yeah,
that year.
And this was in the middle of that little stretch there where it was like things weren't looking good for anybody.
And Jack, now 16 years ago, you were 14 years old.
Yeah, it was my freshman year of high school.
And where were you?
I was on my couch. Yeah, so it was just me and my mom.
Okay.
Yeah, I think my dad was asleep in the other room.
Where was Jill?
We actually weren't dating yet, which is shocking.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
you were in your pursuit. Still in pursuit.
Well,
mode.
No, I remember they won. They won. And believe me, I had my seat where I was convinced that if I moved, they were going to lose.
Yeah.
It's normal stuff.
No,
immediately
sure.
Ran upstairs to the family desktop, posted on Facebook.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, we won the World Series. It's crazy. but yeah, I don't know. And it was the best, but I don't have like a. I was always jealous of people that were in college for that, because talk about a much different time than just 14 sitting by myself.
Yeah. Well, so I was in my apartment.
Were you here or were you in Chicago?
No, I was in here. I was here. So I came back here in 2007, and I watched it in my apartment with the girl I was dating at the time, and she didn't care. But the memory I have after they win, and I'm very excited, have a tear in my eye, is that she remembered she had left her bike tied up on Broad Street.
That bike's gone.
That bike is gone.
The bike was there the next day. Now, I expected that bike to be drunk, wearing a Phillies hat, passed out. The bike was okay, actually. The bike made it. But I remember she said, and I was like, she was like, wait a minute. My bike is on Broad Street. Is it going to be okay?
Right.
And I was like, I will buy you a new bike. That bike's not going to make it.
I did a bad Harry impression that night,
because
I'm watching the game as it was going, and I couldn't help it once Lidge struck out the last guy, and I was like something to the effect of "Celebrate Philadelphia"
in the Harry voice.
Yeah, yeah,
it wasn't
a Harry voice, but it was clearly me trying to do a whole "Celebrate we're world champions" type of thing.
Yeah,
yes, I clearly had done that. So the crazy thing was talking to everybody who was leaving, because I'm still on the air. So people that was leaving the stadium on their way downtown.
Now, that show is fun.
Yes.
The After They Won show.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's listening.
Yeah, I got a lot of happy people calling the show that
night. Well, especially because it was obviously an abbreviated game. I mean, it started in the sixth. So, like, you were on
for... I didn't think of that.
You were on for, like, a good amount of time at, like, a reasonable hour.
Yep.
What a win.
It was awesome, man. It was awesome. It was awesome. Because that was my first experience with a championship here.
Oh, right.
That was my first experience.
Well, and I... Just if you're listening, if you happen to record radio shows, I would pay $1,000 for your radio show. I would pay more than $1,000 for your radio show. Speaking of which, he was on the mound when it happened. One Brad Lidge joins us. Brad, we appreciate your time today.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to be with you guys.
So before we get started we were just talking about 08. You have a new card coming out, the Lights Out card, which they're making, 2008 of them. And you can buy it. You can see it, all that stuff, at SpectreSportsCardArt.com. 54 of them signed by you, 98 signed by you and Ruiz. The thing that I think is cool is some of them have pieces of the baseballs from the World Series, which I think is cool. Where did they get the baseballs?
Yeah, well, so they're from the playoffs. They're not from the World Series, but they are from the NLDS and the NLCS. And so, let me explain that a little better. So Jordan and I were thinking about, you know, kind of a cool, different way to have something more on these cards. And, you know, you see those baseball cards these days that have, like, you know, quote unquote game used memorabilia and that type of thing. But I was kind of looking at my personal collection, and you know, there's some things in there that you know, will remain in there forever. But then I was also kind of thinking about, you know what, it might be freaking awesome to kind of pull some of these things out of my collection that I still value a ton, but it might be awesome to be able to give these back to the fans a little bit. So I have baseballs that I kept after each game.
Oh, so they're yours. They're literally your
ball. They're my baseballs. From finishing up the games and from the NLDS and the, you know, like, you know, getting those outs to advance to the next series. And so I took the baseballs out of there, and, you know, right after the games, I marked them with a pen just so I would remember them for my own collection. And I thought, you know, I mean, the fans obviously in Philly, like, have given me so much over the years. I thought it might be cool for them to kind of have these baseballs on that card so they can hold a piece of 2008 themselves from that postseason run we made. And it ended up being awesome. It was, you know, quite a process, I think, a manufacturing process to be able to get those, you know, a big piece of those baseballs on the cards themselves. But, you know, Jordan Spector did an unbelievable job. The art is incredible. I mean, each one of these cards is a piece of art for sure. And, you know, he did an awesome job getting a lot of variations and everything else in these cards. So it's been a really fun project.
So again, that is SpectreSportsCardArt.com. It's wild to see cards where they are too. Like when I was growing, I'm 48. So when I was growing up, the cards were a huge deal. I actually bought my first car buying and selling baseball cards. Were you a card guy growing up?
So I'm 48 also. So, you know, we survived, I think, that era of late 80s and early 90s.
Yes,
where, like, baseball cards are completely worthéless from that era, Felix. But, so I definitely did. And I think, you know, one thing that's kind of true about these two is there's, you know, these really cool, like, kind of hologram, you know, finishes on them as well. And they kind of provide this kind of nostalgic feeling because I think that, like, first started in, like, you know, around the early 90s or something. But it's kind of a throwback in that way for me. But also with all the current, like, you know, really cool things that you can actually put on cards. So, you know, Jordan designed them all, and he, you know, I got to kind of see the process as it was kind of going along, his artwork, and then, like, all the little subtle variations he put on everything, and to create these cards. And so it was really cool to see how the whole thing broke down.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't believe they're your baseballs. That's a cool addition to that. Not having the balls is cool, but the fact that they were yours is neat as well. So today, the anniversary of winning the World Series. How much of that moment do you actually remember, and how much is just a blur?
I remember it pretty well. I tried to make a conscious effort of, you know, you watch the replay of the game, you know, as often as I've seen it, it's easy to kind of remember it from, you know, the camera's perspective instead of my own.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I'll make a conscious effort to go back into my mind every once in a while and kind of think about, you know, when I was gripping that pitch and kind of what we were talking about on the mound before I faced Hinsky and everything that was going on. But it was a blur. It was a crazy, you know, couple days we had to wait with the rain and everything else. But I still remember it well. You know, I can't believe it's been 16 years, honestly. That makes me feel a little bit older, but at the same time, it kind of reminds you that it's really tough to win a World Series. And, you know, especially, you know, nowadays in this era, I mean, it's a tricky thing to do. You know, just because you're a great team doesn't always guarantee stuff. But, you know, we were very fortunate that at that time we were all kind of coming into our, you know, we were all having a great season, and we just, you know, I had this incredible defense behind me. I know I felt just incredibly confident every time I went out to the mound that no matter what was going to happen, that we were going to get the right result was going to ensue. And, yeah, it was just an incredible season and culminating with, you know, a dream come true. It's something you dream about since you're a kid.
I always wonder with you, Brad, you got through that season perfect. Forget about that All-Star game. You got through that season perfect when it came to save opportunity. See, we remember everything. but I always wonder with you, when you got into the postseason, particularly when you get to the NLCS and into the World Series, how do you keep it from creeping into your mind that you haven't blown a save yet, and you certainly don't want to do it at this point in time, this late in the postseason? Did you have to sort of, I guess, fight against that sort of instinct being there in your head that, man, don't let this be the time that I blow a save?
Well, you know what? If for some reason I was able to block it out, the media was not going to let that happen.
You're welcome.
Say they brought it up all the time.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. They brought it up, you know, before every game, I felt like, in the postseason. But, you know, for a while I was trying to fight against, like, thinking about it. And I was like, you know what, just let it go. Like, you know, just trust your process. Like, the whole year you've been doing the same routine. You've been going out there, taking everything just pitch by pitch, never getting ahead of yourself, and really just, you know, just being in the moment. So, if it happened, it happened, you know, that would suck. But, you know, fortunately it didn't. And, you know, yeah, it's somewhere in the back of your mind, you're aware. It, you know, as the season progressed, as the playoffs progressed, as we got to the World Series, this would be a hell of a time to blow it. But fortunately that didn't happen. And, you know, like I said, the belief was always there, and I trusted the process and, you know, all the work I had put into it. And I believe we were, like, truly, because of the defense we had and everything else, I believe that no matter what was going to happen, even if, you know, in a one-run game there was a leadoff triple, I still felt like we were going to get the save.
Talking to Brad Lidge, obviously, on the anniversary, 60th anniversary of the 08 World Series. Brad, there was a time in the middle of the season, you know, you guys scored 20 runs against the Cardinals on June 13th. And then from June 14th on, you went 3-11. Offense kind of struggled a little bit. Myers got sent down. What was going on in that clubhouse to where you guys pulled yourself out of that and got back to being the team that we'd seen for a majority of that season?
You know, it's a good question. I remember that stretch. I don't remember us panicking too much, but I do remember, you know, when Breck got sent down, everyone was like, oh, okay, like, everyone has to play better. Because, look, I've been on teams, you know, in Houston in 2007, like, a lot of guys that I was good friends with had got sent down or traded or whatever. And I, you know, I for one remember, like, hey, you know what, you start playing bad baseball and nobody's safe in this clubhouse. So I think collectively, you know, we were aware that we had a really good team, you know, and I was aware how good we were offensively. So I think, you know, collectively we kind of felt like, just keep going out there, trusting the process, the results will start to happen. It's, you know, 162 game season. There's no chance that you're going to get through it without a bad stretch. I don't care if you're the 27 Yankees or whoever, like, you're going to have a bad stretch, but you just got to limit that. And, you know, you got to make sure that each guy is being accountable and making sure that they're going out there and playing their best every single night. But I think we had, you know, a fairly, and it wasn't a young team, but it was a team with a lot of guys that had a lot to prove. And then it was a lot of superstars to be that were coming into that season that was really launching them into that spot. So everyone just had a lot of energy, I think, and a lot of mental focus.
So you mentioned how hard it is to win a World Series. We're going through that now as we're watching the team. You know, the Phillies this year, I would say they had a lot of strengths, but going into the playoffs, the one thing we as a show all felt the most confident in was the bullpen. And then we get to that Mets series and just, you know, Hoffman and Strom, and it went haywire. When you were watching that, first of all, I'm sure you had some empathy having been a reliever, but was there something that you saw that they were not doing during the playoffs that they did during the regular season? I guess we're all just trying to figure out what happened.
You know, it's a great question, right? And yeah, I watched, of course, every pitch and was thinking about, you know, as the relievers were coming out there, I was trying to go through the inning and through the approach with them and kind of thinking what they were going to do. The one thing that I think might be something that probably needs to change, because these are very talented relievers. I mean, for stretches in baseball, I'd say they had the best bullpen in baseball. But in the postseason, when you're facing an extremely hot team coming in, like the Mets, you have to change something. You can't just do the same things you've been doing. I mean, you can, for a couple hitters or for maybe even the first game. But if they continue to operate at that super high level and they're as hot as they can be, you've got to start changing what you're doing. You can no longer rely on the same analytics that you looked at all year long, because they're not working in that moment. And you have to go out there and just kind of have a feel, and you have to start pitching, and you have to start thinking like, the analytics say to do this, but like, that's not, I can see that that's not going to work with how hot this hitter is right now. I need to do something different. So I think sometimes we're especially bullpens now, and I don't just like blame the Phillies bullpen for this. This is just true across the board, it seems like. But, these hot teams coming in, the bullpens will go out there and they'll do the same things they've been doing. But when a team is really hot, it doesn't work. So that's when you start, throwing a ball in off the plate, making hitters not feel comfortable, and then seeing the reaction from that. But sometimes you can lose the feel of pitching itself a little bit, the art of pitching itself, and just get too reliant on just trying to throw everything the exact same way because it's worked all year long. You don't want to go into the playoffs and change things if they've been working for you, but at the same time, we are seeing now that super hot teams that come in, you need to figure out a different way to pitch guys when they're super hot. So you just kind of have to have that feel, and you got to know when you go out there that you might have to change something that day, and that's okay.
Talking to Brad Lidge on the 16th anniversary of the Phillies winning the 08 World Series, the Phillies have, over the last few years, had a lot of guys, I guess, in different roles. So the Phillies bullpen, not everyone knew who was going to be the closer one night, or it might be a different guy another night. As a reliever, is that something that is difficult to prepare for if you know you might get used in a different situation that you may be comfortable in?
Well, I mean, it would have been maybe for me back in, 2008, 9, 10, 11, whatever, when I knew I was going to close, I like to be fully ready for that. But I think we see enough bullpens and enough bullpen pitchers these days that go with that approach, that guys have kind of been able to be flexible and adaptable to it. This isn't like, I would say this, it's probably been going on for what, 6, 7, 8 years, where it's becoming more and more of a trend to not have one guy unless you have, a dominant closer at the end of games, which only maybe, 8, 10 teams have. For all the other teams, two thirds of them, they're going to use whichever guy is best in that moment, which to me makes sense. And as long as the bullpen has, buy-in toward it, then it should be fine. Is it a little bit trickier to stay ready for innings, 6, 7, 8, and 9? Yeah, it is. I mean, it takes more mental energy and everything else, but at the same time, that's what guys have to do nowadays. It would be nice, though, to have, one guy at the back end of the games that you knew was going to throw the ninth, and everybody in their roles before that. I think it's a little more settling as a bullpen as a whole.
All right, Brad, last one. The Phillies offense has been great at times over the last few years, but they have been subject to these cold streaks. And one of the things that both Dave Dombrowski and Rob Thompson said after the season is they need to do better and have more of a commitment to using the whole field and having a different approach at the plate. However, most of their players are either in their prime, maybe at the back end of their prime. Is plate approach and using all, the whole field, is that something that players can adjust to and change later in their career? Or does a different approach mean different players?
I think, certain hitters are able to make that, adaptation a little bit quicker than others. For some guys, asking them to do something entirely different towards the end of their career, it's not going to breed success. And it's also not something you can all of a sudden just change when the postseason comes around. Although you can change your approach, a little bit, just as the bullpen guys need to come out and maybe have a little bit different feel. There needs to be offensive players perhaps that come out there and say, swinging for, the home run every single pitch at this moment is not going to work. And I'm not saying they're doing that, but if that's been your recipe all year long, then maybe something needs to change up a little bit But it is, it's not just the Phillies. It's kind of everybody across baseball has that approach, right? So yeah, I think you would probably need, you know, it'd be tough to ask certain guys, put it this way, to all of a sudden start, you know, trying to lay bunts down the third baseline or try and, you know, slap a ball to left field if they haven't done it all year long or if they haven't done it in their entire career and they've been playing 8-9 seasons. So, if that's the case, then you would probably have to get a different guy or two if that was the recipe, if that's what they feel they needed to do to have success in the postseason. I would personally like to see the same guys we have be able to make a little bit subtle change in their, you know, in their two-strike approach when it comes down to it in the postseason.
All right, Brad, well, we appreciate your time, man. Of the iconic images in Philadelphia sports, there's Brandon Graham hitting the ball out of Tom Brady's hand. There's the Allen Iverson stepping over Tyronn Lue, and you on your knees with your hands in the air celebrating the World Series, I think brings back chills and great memories for all of us. So, so thank you that, and we appreciate your time today, man.
Appreciate it, brother.
Hey, guys, I appreciate you, too, and yeah, we'll see what happens with the Phillies this offseason, but in the meantime, go Eagles.
Yes. All right.
All right, brother.
All right. Thank you, Brad. Mm-hmm. Again, you can get that card. You can see it and get it at SpectorSportsCardArt.com. You know, I wonder.
I always like Brad Lidge.
Dude, he's the best.
And had the one great year for us.
Yes.
Man. Really? Was he with us about as long as he was with Houston?
So he's with us until 11. So 08, 09, 10, 11. So four seasons.
I think just
he's an Astro in 03 to 07. So yeah, 4-4.
Yeah, almost, yeah. He won the World Series with us.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny talking to some of the, when we talk to LA, he brings up the analytics stuff a lot. Brad Lidge brought up in a sort of negative way a little bit there.
Numbers.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes with things like the closer thing, whether... Yeah, having a specific closer, and I wonder sometimes if there is something unquantifiable in those things that we're missing a little bit in baseball. Baseball was really the first sport to embrace numbers in such an extreme way. It was baseball first, and then basketball.
Yep.
And I understand them, and I agree with their application a lot of times. But it does feel like sometimes there are changes that even if the numbers on the whole are saying it's the right thing, that maybe it's not. You know,
put the computer away.
Yeah,
and have a feel for the game.
You hinky dorks.
Yeah. Have a feel for the game.
Yeah, use your gut.
Yeah.
I think the game is going back a little bit.
Yes.
You know why?
Pushing back against it.
Yeah, because everybody's like, hold on. That's not what I would have done, but the numbers said do it, and it didn't work for me.
Right. Well, one of the things for me, and Jack made fun of me very early in the show because I expressed this, is I like when starting pitchers, the starting pitchers only going 4 and 5 innings.
Yeah, you're a horseman.
Well, I just think it makes the game worse in almost every way.
Right.
And I know the third time through the order and blah, 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 blah. But there's just no way you can convince me that a good start. I would rather have my good starting pitcher in there for the third time through the order than some middle reliever.
Yes. I don't care about 5 years down the road saving arms and all that nonsense.
They're making $20 million.
Larry Anderson played for peanuts and pitched every fifth day. Or no, he was a reliever.
They pitched like all the time.
Yeah,
I pitched all the time.
He warmed up, I believe, for 20 straight games, or warmed up or entered 20 straight games.
Exactly.
Well, back when men were men.
Gerrit Cole's not pitching
88
tonight.
Pitches?
What are we doing?
Gerrit Cole's not going.
No.
The season is about to be over
with? Season's on the line, and they're throwing, God bless him, but they're throwing Luis Gil tonight?
Yeah. And to make matters worse, the Dodgers are going bullpen game.
And they're
going
to win.
To close out a World Series game. It's sickening.
Give me Gerrit Cole tonight.
This used to be a proper country.
You coward.
All right. Analytics. Who needs them?
Analytics, man.
By the way, the Sixers are fined $100,000 for the Embiid thing.
Ah, okay.
Right. Well, hold on.
Most importantly, I want to thank our fans. This is going to be awesome.
You just wrote that out there.
100 grand.
Well, hold on. That means they did something wrong.
It means that they didn't communicate to the league specifically what was going on.
Here's 100 grand.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
That's Yeah, what is $100,000 to Josh Harris, man? Come on.
Man, dude, it's a
Josh, you could pay Josh.
Rounding error.
They could have told Josh Harris $10 million after the
yeah,
Jaden Daniels.
Josh Harris
Hail Mary.
Don't even know his team got fined. He don't even know he's been fined, man.
Yeah, he's gonna pay Jaden Daniels jerseys. Yes. He's gonna send the league the 10,000 replica jerseys from Jaden Daniels. So
who's hurt again?
Seriously, do you think he's been back up here?
What's
since
that?
The football season started? You think has he been back here?
Oh, I think so.
Yes.
Well, maybe to visit, maybe for a lunch.
Down there.
Yeah, maybe for a lunch, where all the players are playing.
Yeah.
So the top 5 of 5 is next, which is everybody's favorite part of the WIP afternoon show. Jack, what do you have in store?
It's time to hold the midday show accountable.
Ooh, oh, we're attacking the midday show.
Yeah, we took down the morning show last week.
I love it.
We're going after the midday show.
I told Ike after you left our meeting today that the time I felt most insulted by Ike is when he said that's like something the midday show would do to me.
Now, when he's like, when you said that, and not to bring this all onto the air,
I didn't know we were bringing this on the air today.
Did you mean the current midday show or the old midday show,
or a midday show?
I don't even remember what y'all talking about.
Yeah.
Taking everybody to Pound Town, baby.
All right. Well, we hold the midday show accountable next. This is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.